In seminary, I enrolled in a class, actually we enrolled in a class, called The Ethical Imagination with Professor Gabriella Latini at Starr King School for the Ministry. One of the texts was Paul Lederach's book, The Moral Imagination, The Art and Soul of Building Peace. Lederach has been to many crisis locations around the world to help broker peace. His work reconnects us to the sense that cultivating the imagination can be a powerful tool in making the world truly a better place. In one of the chapters, he explores the story of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Many of you probably remember many elements of this folktale. A town is infested with rats. A man comes along claiming he can fix the problem. The mayor of the town says, "We'll pay you well if you can." The dude comes back with his flute, and the rats follow him out of town, and they drown in the river. And when he goes to receive payment, the mayor hems and haws and essentially denies what the piper is due. The pied, which means two or more colors, the Pied Piper returns and uses his magic flute to lure the children out of town, never to be seen again. Now, there are various versions of the story about what happens to the children, and many scholars believe that the story was a myth based on a true event of death visiting a village, perhaps a plague. But Lederach's point in retelling the story is when he read it as a younger person, the moral of the story seemed clear. When you make a promise, you best keep your word. But four decades later, when he read the story again, a different moral caught his eye. He writes, "What I saw was the power of a flutist to move a town, address an evil, and bring the powerful to accountability. Without any visible power or even prestige, much less a violent weapon, a flutist transformed a whole community. The moral of the story now seemed to be watch out for the flutist and his creative music, for like the invisible wind, they touch and move and all that they encounter in their path." What are the stories in our lives that might have a different moral to them? What do they have to teach us if we approach them with new eyes as we listen to more hearts? There are stories throughout time that may or may not reflect exactly what happened, stories or myths that are based on a true event that point to what we might learn about what is possible. John Paul Lederach refers to a couple of anecdotes. In the 1980s, the countries of Mali and Burkina Faso went to war over issues surrounding their borders. All mediation efforts had failed. The story goes that the president of neighboring Guinea persuaded his fellow presidents to attend a meeting at his palace. In front of the presidential palace in Conakry, one of West Africa's celebrated griots, or praise singers, Kanta Kouyaté, put on a spectacular performance before the host and visiting presidents. The performance took on the form of entertainment, but Kanta Kouyaté was calling on the two presidents at war to make peace. He did this by evoking their ancestors and appealing to their inherent human goodness as leaders to lead their people out of the conflict. Through poetry, song, and dance, he brought out qualities that were a hallmark of a true African leader and challenged the two presidents to look to their ancestors and bring back dignity instead of shame and suffering to their peoples. So emotional was the performance that the two presidents not only shed tears and embraced publicly, they took a solemn oath before the public and witnessed by their ancestors not to return to war. Music can be the bridge to such transformation. May we be so blessed by our careful stewardship of music's gifts. Another story Lederach shares is the peace process in Ireland had begun and a ceasefire was in effect. And then in 1998, some of you may remember, a major bombing during the Troubles of Northern Ireland took place. Many feared this bombing was the end of the peace process. 29 people were killed. People from all over the world responded with an outpouring of grief and solidarity, sending flowers to the town, marking the tragedy that claimed the lives of people from all over. A few weeks later, town officials in a radio interview were in a quandary about what to do with all the flowers. A woman heard the broadcast and offered to help make the flowers into paper. People made artistic pieces with the paper as they spoke about where they had been when the bomb went off. People from various sides of the conflict came together to do these projects, and eventually an art exhibit was put together, and people who lost loved ones presented with gifts of artwork. One poignant moment in particular was noted at the event when a Roman Catholic offered a Protestant a peace dove. Art is a powerful force for transformation. May we be careful stewards of its many gifts. There is so much violence that has been connected to religion. People fighting and killing over what a person believes about God. Could this be why John Lennon included that line about no religion? Had he only experienced the violence perpetrated by varying beliefs? I wonder if the song might have been different had he experienced Unitarian Universalism. And then I worry that depending on where he attended, if he would have experienced what UU Nancy McDonald Ladd calls fake fights that we UUs sometimes have, right? Over theology and governance and money and paint color. That happens in some congregations, maybe not here. As proof of his statement, I don't know. But I know this Unitarian Universalist faith challenges us to lean into the places of discomfort in our discernment about what is true and what it means to be alive. If only one answers nothing, nothing, and nothing to those questions of what surprised me, what moved me, and what inspired me, we may only be experiencing the world with our own limited seeing or knowing or sensing. How might we endeavor to be really open to one another's questions? And the answers that one has come to for at least this moment in time. How might we respectfully talk about God and not God without arguing? Maybe the poets can help. This excerpt is from a poem called At the River Clarion by Mary Oliver, who uses a male pronoun to contemplate life and God and to imagine what he is or isn't. Now that image may or may not work for you, as you imagine, and I invite you to look for the possibilities of connection with the poet rather than where you diverge. Connection rather than difference. She writes, "I don't know who God is exactly, but I'll tell you this. I was sitting in the river named Clarion on a water-splashed stone, and all afternoon I listened to the voices of the river talking. Whenever the water struck a stone, it had something to say. And the water itself, and even the mosses trailing under the water, and slowly, very slowly, it became clear to me what they were saying. Said the river, 'I am part of holiness.' And I too," said the stone. "And I too," whispered the moss beneath the water. I'd been to the river before a few times. Don't blame the river that nothing happened quickly. You don't hear such voices in an hour or a day. You don't hear them at all if selfhood has stuffed your ears. And it's difficult to hear anything anywhere through all the traffic, the ambition. If God exists, he isn't just butter and good luck. He's also the tick that killed my wonderful dog, Luke. Said the river, imagine everything you can imagine, then keep going. If God exists, he isn't just churches and mathematics. He's the forest, he's the desert, he's the ice caps that are dying. He's the ghetto and the Museum of Fine Arts. He's Van Gogh and Allen Ginsberg and Robert Motherwell. He's the many desperate hands cleaning and preparing their weapons. He's every one of us, potentially. The leaf of grass, the genius, the politician, the poet. And if this is true, isn't it something very important? Yes, it could be that I am a tiny piece of God, and each of you, too, are at least of his intention and his hope, which is a delight beyond measure. I don't know how you get to suspect such an idea. I only know that the river kept singing. The The phrase, "I don't know," followed by "I only know," feels so very familiar to me as a Unitarian Universalist. I do not have, nor do you, nor anyone we know, have all the answers to all the things. And as we sang in our opening hymn, "From honest doubt we shall not flee, nor fetter the inquiring mind, for where the hearts of all are free, a truer faith we there shall find. A truer faith we there shall find." As we consider the stories of the Pied Piper, the doctor who found a way to see with his heart, the paper art, the poetry and music of a praise singer, how do we apply them to us? What are the stories we tell that may or may not be serving us? Not the worrisome imaginations of potential stuff, but how might we engage in the generative, productive, ethical imagination that calls us to live more whole lives? How might we begin to think bigger than that and imagine our collective lives into being? In the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, the participants discuss that in the common paradigm of belief, the brain only sees what we believe is possible. By matching patterns of sight, sound, thought, etc., that already exist within ourselves and our conditioning, and we perpetuate that reality. Though quantum physics postulates that we might be able to alter our own realities by changing our thoughts, imagining things we've not yet been able to imagine, or yet perhaps dared to imagine. A few years ago, you may have heard about this. Javjit Singh wrote an article of his experience in New York City. His colleague Fiona Aboud was doing a photo series on Six in America. So this very skinny and self-conscious man who has a full beard and turban dressed up as Captain America and went to Central Park for a photo shoot. He described it this way. Once he got over his own self-consciousness about his body in a superhero suit, he prepared himself as best as he could for the stares, the glares, and the questions. Singh recounts, a young boy said, "Captain America does not have a beard and a turban." "Why not?" I asked him. "I was born here. We could have a new Captain America who is sick or black or Hispanic." The boy thought about this. Finally, he conceded that yes, maybe a black or Hispanic Captain America would be okay, but his brain couldn't make sense of it. Captain America in a turban? In a beard? He'd never conceived of such a thing before. "That's exactly what brought me to this park on a beautiful summer day," he says, "to make fresh neural connections in our collective consciousness." He shared that there were a few obnoxious people, sadly. And he also shared that he hadn't anticipated how many people wanted to get their picture taken with him. He reflects on this experience and says, "It was the most unlikeliest of days for me. Hundreds of strangers came up, and we were able to lay to rest any anxieties or inhibitions in those moments about other people, about the unknown, about ourselves, about violating other people's personal space, or not understanding their beliefs. We could simply meet, say hi, snap a memory of that moment, and I could leave brand new images on the hard drive of their mind, as well as their handheld devices. It takes a lot of courage to do this," a few people said during the day. "I've never seen myself as courageous, but circumstances in life create moments where courage finds its way to us." How might courage find its way to us in this moment? Knowing all that we know and not yet knowing enough. What might courage look like here? We've already made some moves in that direction. Courage might look like trying a new model of governance. It is to imagine a different way of being. It might be addressing the systems employed by white supremacy culture. it might be calling new ministers. Sometimes courage looks like using direct address when we feel hurt, or asking for forgiveness when we've wronged someone, or recognizing the superheroes that live here among us. What might be courageous for us as a congregation to imagine into being today, this month, this year, and as long as the time we have together? What might we be courageous enough to imagine into being? Reverend Lynn and I really hope to hear your answers, because as more and more news rolls out, our lives might just depend on them. If each one did just one thing beautifully, complex life on earth might not die. The theme of the message today can be summed up by Brian Andreas, who is an artist of what he calls story people. They're handwritten quotes with stick figure type drawings of all different sizes and shapes, sometimes filled in with bright colors and geometric patterns. This is from his piece called Imagining World. In my dream, the angel shrugged and said, "If we fail this time, it will be a failure of imagination." And then she placed the world gently in the palm of my hand. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do, yet to address our conflicts, our human issues, and to move outside our egos and our bodies, to know that we actually truly are one, will require courageous imagination. The world has been placed gently in our hands. What will we imagine into being?